Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Thursday evening Dhamma class from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, on February 22, 2018. This is the week 7 class of our 2018 12-week Dhamma study based on my book, The Truth of Happiness. This is the second week of our study on the three marks of existence. And my talk, again, will be on the Kulavadala Sutta. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. So we're halfway through the course, give or take. We began with an introduction to Shamatha Vipassana meditation, the meditation method that the Buddha taught within that broader framework of the Eightfold Path. Then we studied the Buddha's teachings on mindfulness from the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, the Four Noble Truths, and then the Eightfold Path over the past 3 weeks. And so now we're getting into what all that applies to. And so the Buddha taught that all things in the phenomenal world carry the three marks of existence. All things are impermanent. Because of a misunderstanding, because of ignorance of Four Noble Truths, we don't understand what constitutes a self. And because of that misunderstanding, disappointing and unsatisfactory experiences arise in life. So, like any good doctor, the Buddha first describes the disease, if any is present, and then he describes our individual contributions to that disease so that we can stop that, and then any other factors that would help alleviate that disease. And that's what the Buddha taught us in Eightfold Path. The Buddha's words, and you could say that the entire Dhamma is included here, and you could say that just about any statement that the Buddha makes. Be mindful of impermanence to end conceit. And so again, it could be said that everything the Buddha taught is included and inferred in that one sentence. If we truly understand the nature of impermanence, we will end conceit. To many people, that would seem like almost an incomprehensible statement. Where's the connection between impermanence and conceit? It's because of a lack of understanding that of impermanence that we try to establish a permanent self. Even a permanent self, even a permanent self that has been bestowed the gift of grace and faith, that it itself is an entity that can live forever. And that's the big one. So we, in order to decide that we have to have or are inhabiting a permanent self, we first have to trick ourselves into believing that it is a permanent self, when in fact the truth of the matter is that anything that we can used to define a self is in itself impermanent, and so the self is impermanent, which ultimately means that it's foolish to even attempt to try to do that, which includes trying to attempt to create a better or more formidable self and then establish that self as permanent, meaning in some way better suited to the environment, either physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, or all of the above, and then say, aha, that's an awakened human being. That's my ideal picture of what awakening means, someone that can overcome all of this. And of course, the Buddha never taught any of that. He taught that any attempt to do so with that intention is itself foolish. He taught that anything that is attempted along those lines is simply eye-making. And then he continues by saying, when impermanence is understood, it is also understood that none of this, meaning the entire environment that we're living in, is self. Understanding not self uproots conceit, it uproots eye-making. When fully established, release is complete. Release from what? Taken in, again, everything has to be taken in the right context. Release from those wrong views that led to the assumption that it's possible to establish a self in any realm. Remember, assumptions are mental fabrications. Mental fabrications rooted in ignorance can only produce a view of a self that itself is rooted in ignorance. And anything that follows from that only continues that ignorance. That the great embellishments and additions to the Buddha's Dhamma were done for strictly that reason, to continue to establish eye-making in some realm where everything that the Buddha taught is taught to recognize and abandon eye-making in any realm. It's kind of jump forward in the article. And so here the Buddha is making a connection between the five clinging aggregates and suffering and dependent origination. Friends form, meaning physical objects in the physical body, is like foam. Seeing clearly, foam is empty and without substance, whether past, present, or future, internal, external, subtle, or obvious. Seeing form as it is, like foam on the water, brings wisdom to the well-instructed. Clearly seeing, they become disenchanted with form, disenchanted with feeling, disenchanted with perception, disenchanted with fabrications, and disenchanted with consciousness. So the Buddha is relating that directly to five clinging aggregates. The five clinging aggregates are form, perceptions, mental fabrications, feelings, and ongoing consciousness. But it's consciousness rooted in ignorance. So it's not a type of consciousness that we should start look for any value in its consciousness. If it's rooted in ignorance, the assumptions that it will come to are itself rooted in ignorance. Recognize that one thing, and then it's possible to start developing right view or a right way of looking at the world. It's when we try to hold on to some views, add to a few others, deconstruct a few others, and then create a whole new view now out of who I am in relation to the world, but rooted in ignorance, that can only continue ignorance. The Buddha teaches an entirely new way of looking at ourselves in relation to the world. That's simply another way of saying we go from a wrong view to a right view, but we have to be willing to challenge the initial wrong views, or we'll never be able to get to and enter into right view. As the Buddha teaches, right view is be mindful of wrong view and enter, remain in right view. This is one's right view. And then he goes through a whole series that we've gone through in the past couple of weeks of incorporating the Eightfold Path in order to develop that profound right view. So there's a lot that I just talked about, and we're breaking up these classes for at least 2 weeks. So part two will be next week, and I'll get into the Kulavadela Sutta next week, where Dhamma Dina teaches her husband in a very concise way the entire Dhamma. But I think it's a good idea to break these up. So, Greg, do you have any questions about what I just talked about? And do you see how the Eightfold Path brings a profound understanding of impermanence and why that is so key to understanding the Dhamma? I'll let you answer now.
Yeah.
Good, we're done.
I have a little trouble differentiating the aggregates, but I'm sure that's for another time.
Yeah, it's another one of those things. The first 600 times I heard it, I couldn't remember what they were. And then the next 600 times it was just remembering what they were. And then it was figuring out how they all fit.
Yeah.
Form, feeling, perceptions, mental fabrications, and ongoing consciousness. The key there is consciousness rooted in ignorance. It's not a grand cosmic consciousness. It's surprising how quickly we want to go there and say, oh yeah, I know that consciousness. That's that grand cosmic consciousness that we're all a part of. Maybe we are, but that has nothing to do with the Buddha's teaching. And then to look at these, if the Buddha said the five clinging aggregates are your body, your thoughts, the assumptions you've made about yourself, how you feel about those assumptions, and your overall thinking, would that be more relevant to you?
That makes more sense the way the way I take the words, because often in my mind, feeling, perception, I think I need to spend some more time looking at how they're differentiated.
Yes, that's what these couple of weeks are about. So, and I'm actually getting a little bit ahead of the game. Next week is dependent origination and the five clinging aggregates. I think the subheading is what constitutes a self or something like that. But it really is part of all of this, these 3 or 4 weeks right now, and this part of the course. the problem that we have in establishing a self is we're establishing it from that point of view of ignorance. We're not standing on solid ground. So in order to describe or create anything, what it's founded on is obviously the most important thing. So when we found our worldview and our self-view on something that is, like the Buddha just described, like foam on the water, nothing good can come of it. Nothing substantial, nothing useful will come of it. So initially what the Buddha is teaching is that the views that you're holding of a self in relation to the world are all views that are rooted in ignorance. You haven't been given any good information yet. And you first have to recognize that so that you're willing to let go of rather than accommodate your views if you are to awaken. Does that make sense, Greg? Because a conditioned mind, a mind rooted in ignorance, will take things even as brilliant as an awakened human being's teachings and immediately start to adapt and accommodate those views so it doesn't have to change its own views. And that's exactly what happened even during the Buddha's time to what the Buddha was teaching, and then later on in the subsequent Buddhist councils, and obviously into today. Every time the Buddha's teaching moved through a different culture, it was changed in some way, accommodated to that culture or whatever charismatic individuals were happening to be teaching. And you can just trace the history, and you'll see that every time somebody came in contact with the Dhamma and wanted it to be different, they made it different, and if other people were interested in that way, then it grew, and if it didn't, it didn't grow. But that's exactly how the different Buddhisms developed, too. All rooted in that initial wrong view that the Dhamma should be something other than what it is. So the important thing about what we're looking at now is to recognize that all things are impermanent, including this thing that I am calling a self. And that leads directly to the third noble truth, and that cessation of the process of self-created dukkha is possible. It points to impermanence. And because I'm the one that set the wheel of lies in motion, the untruths, I'm also the one that can undo it. And I can establish reality in my life as long as I know where to look for it and how to do it. And again, that's exactly why the Buddha taught an Eightfold Path. It's not to describe reality to us so we learn it and take it on like it's an acquired learning. We learn it, then we experience it, and then we live it. It becomes part of our life. This initial opening into understanding that all things are impermanent is as important as pointing to the goal of understanding the nature of suffering, because it's all tied together. The end result is a profound understanding of the nature of human life, and that as human beings, we are always in a constant process of becoming. And so then that leads to the most important question that we can ever ask ourselves or anyone else. What am I going to become? And that is reflected in what we're holding in mind in this moment. That is why a well-concentrated mind is necessary to develop, to hold in mind the refined mindfulness of the Eightfold Path, so that our life, as our life unfolds, becomes a moment-by-moment reflection of the understanding of the Eightfold Path. So that's tonight's talk. Any questions about that or where we're going with this? Does it make sense, Greg? Do you see?
It does. And, specifically, it speaks to me. I've been guilty of that desire to find that loophole in any teaching to give up the self. Every time there's another teaching that seems to allow for a permanent self, people deeply want that. They get excited, like, oh, maybe I can keep with self.
Yeah.
And I've definitely been guilty of that in the past and seen it and felt it. When it feels, it seems very obvious at other times that all things are impermanent and all these pieces are... If every piece is impermanent, there's no substantial... There's nothing there.
Yeah, and so why keep chasing after or keep creating concepts and theories about this type of thing? It only serves to be a further distraction from the truth, and so it's hurtful in that way. And that, again, it doesn't mean that we should judge any of it harshly, just to recognize it, you know, and wake up if we want to. If we don't want to, we don't have to either. You know? We don't have to face reality that all things are impermanent and there's nothing that we can build a self on. Do you see the efficacy of it and the directness of the Dhamma? In other words, it almost has to be that way, doesn't it, in order to not have the Dhamma be just another distraction. It needs to be kept pure and well-focused in that way. So.
And it all, like the foundation, it's hard to say that that may be the key or most important part, but I guess impermanence with, if you still cling to the permanent self, all the rest of it kind of, it'll still be helpful, maybe in your personal life, but mm-hmm. the rest of it kind of all falls apart as you try and adapt it to maintain a sense of self.
Yeah, that's so right. I think anybody that just takes up Buddhism in general will improve their quality of life, much like any religion will do. And I'm not putting down other religions either. Most of them have a moral and ethical component that helps give you some direction in your life, and that's a good thing. As you get deeper into what the Buddha is teaching, you realize that it has very little to do with that side of it, but it has everything to do with thinking in a mature and direct way that reflects reality rather than how we wish something would be. And again, that is pointing directly to impermanence. And think about the model that the Buddha lived in, which is very similar to today, that you could establish a familial lineage even within an impermanent environment, meaning a royal name, which was very common. Again, it's still common today. We could establish a self that outlives, or at least a name that outlives the physical body, and there was some significance put to that. We play all kinds of games to try to establish a permanent self where it can't be done. And then we do so in such silly names by even putting labels on things like king or queen or prince or any of that stuff to further attempt to string out what can't be strung out, meaning permanence. When the Buddha gave his first teaching to the five groups of friends, Kandana got it. He said that all impermanent things that arise are subject to cessation. The Buddha said, "You're awakened." It's at that basic level that we develop awakening. And so, again, anything that we add to that basic level is taking us away from awakening. And that's why I talk about it so often, why the Buddha did too. You know, let's get to it and awaken. Any other questions or comments about tonight's class, Greg?
No.
Okay, so we're going to continue with the same week 7 for next week. And next week I'll talk on the Dhammadina Sutta. And then we'll get into dependent origination and the five clinging aggregates again. So the next 2 or 3 or 4 weeks are going to be on these same subjects. So if you want to just read both of those chapters and this one again. So we'll finish with metta like we always do. So, find your relaxed meditative posture and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision and being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you for a wonderful class. Peace.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.